Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn in the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today and take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcomes. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work life. This is a very unique time in our world and workplace when how we work has never been more important. As such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Dr. Andre Martin. Dr. Andre is an organizational psychologist and talent management executive with 20 plus years of experience in talent development, executive team development, employee engagement, culture change, C-suite assessment and succession planning, innovation design thinking, strategy development, and employee experience design. He is a father, a husband, and a wily, curious learner who is dedicated to ensuring iconic brands become iconic companies. He is also an author. He has written a very, very good and enlightening and inspiring book entitled Wrong Fit, Right Fit: Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Dr. Andre.
Hey, Greg, thank you very much for having me this morning. It's great to see you.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you're speaking from, please.
This morning, I'm coming to you from Portland, Oregon, on the far, far left coast of the United States. It's bright and sunny, and we're looking forward to enjoy a great day.
Oh, you've just made this host and the listeners very, very jealous. I have a wonderful nephew, grew up in New Jersey, is now in Portland. He's never coming back except to visit once in a while, certainly. So God's country out there, no doubt about it.
No
Dr.
doubt.
Andre, sadly, we've only got 30 minutes. We could spend hours talking about your incredible life and background experience, this amazing book you've written. We're going to jump now right into the deep end of the pool. The word fit could mean different things to different people. The title of your book, Wrong Fit, Right Fit. What exactly, please, is fit?
Yeah, so for the purpose of the book, fit is narrowly defined, and it really is defined as this deep and authentic dedication to how a company works day to day, right? Often when we think about our companies, we think about the products they have. We think about the values like innovation or collaboration, but really our engagement, our happiness, it comes down to how the company works. It comes down to how do we collaborate? How do we solve problems, make decisions? How do we socialize ideas? Give feedback, develop people, assess high performance. How do we socialize? What's our relationship with time? And so these are the things that when you look at what's wrong with work right now, there's $7.9 trillion of lost productivity due to disengagement that's estimated by Gallup to exist in the globe. $7.9 trillion, that number is staggering. And so the book really takes aim at this idea that maybe it doesn't come down to good or bad culture. Maybe it's not about good or bad companies. Maybe it's really about the fit between how talent likes to work, how they like to do all those things, versus how a company does them at their best.
I want to make sure I heard correctly, though you said it twice. You didn't say 7.9 million. You didn't say 7.9 billion. You said 7.9 trillion?
I did, Greg. I got to tell you, that number, when I read it from Gallup, and again, it's an estimate, but it's based on their decades of work in the area of engagement, $7.9 trillion. That's bigger than the market cap of Apple, Google, and Amazon combined. And wow. So you look at that number and I think about it, because I have a lot of empathy for work, right? I dedicated my life to making workplaces better. And I just think about this idea that if those $7.9 trillion were alive in our world, imagine the problems we could solve.
Oh, that is ultimately amazing. No doubt about it. Wow. Just blew me out of the water. That's for sure. Now, it seems like very few companies actually train their employees on how the work really gets done. Am I correct there, Dr. Andre? And if so, why?
Yeah, so Greg, I think you are correct. What's really interesting is the book is really based on about 100 plus interviews that I did with talent all over the world, varying, you know, stages in their careers, varying types of jobs that they had. And there was a couple of red threads that ran through those interviews. One was this idea that, you know, often when we join companies, there's three versions of the companies that we come into contact with. There's the version that we get recruited by, right? And if you go to any career website of any big company out there, you'll see these beautiful websites. They've got happy people doing amazing yeah. things and these wonderful values and all these great benefits of working there. And so we get really enamored with that, right? And then there's a version of the company on the first day we join. When we walk in and we see the best version of the real company, we get the model leaders, we get the best products, we get the impacts that we're having with real customers. And then we get to the place we're going to spend every day. And those three versions of the company are very different. And I think the reason why, Greg, is it comes down to this, is that as companies grow, we add more people. Right? We add more and more people, and they don't just bring our technical skill. What we don't realize is they bring their ways of working. They bring their favorite project management tools. They bring their favorite techniques to run their teams. They bring all their culture stuff with them. And so eventually the company becomes this amalgamation of a lot of different ways of working. And that's why you often hear, right? I remember my interviewers telling me all the time, like when they join companies, they often are told, give it 6 months. We do work very differently here. And you just got to kind of figure your way through it. And then eventually it all makes sense.
Wow.
I think there's a better way to do it, Greg. I think there's a way to say, how does the company work at its best? How do we get really differentiated in those ways of working? And how do we teach people on their first day so they can walk in and practice their craft?
I know I would really, really be a bit worried if someone told me to, wait about 6 months or whatever, really.
It was amazing the number of people that said that. And I think the truth of it is most companies sort of organically build their ways of working, right? And they don't necessarily pay attention to, hey, how do we collaborate? How do we make decisions? How do we solve problems? How do we socialize ideas? What's our beliefs around meetings? And they don't know it. They know it because they're in it, but they don't know how to communicate it to someone who isn't there. And if we could just do that, it would make a lot of the early issues we have in joining our companies go away. And I'll give you a couple of stats that were really interesting. One was from JobVite. And it cited that as recently as 2021, 1 in 3 employees that join a new company leave within the first 90 days. First 90 days. And you know what they cite as the reason? They cite a mismatch of expectation or no clear opportunity for growth.
Wow.
And then another stat, which is another one that just blew me away. And this one is from PwC. And they said that even if employees stay as long as 6 months, new employees, 52% of them are still looking for another job.
Within the first 6 months?
Yeah, because I think the truth is they don't feel settled, Greg, right? Because we know this. If we feel settled in a place, we stop looking around. But when we don't feel settled, we're always going to be thinking about that contingency plan or that plan B.
Wow. This is really amazing and in a lot of ways disheartening, that's for sure. Now, there are two phrases I like to use, and sometimes I use them interchangeably. Okay. One is right fit. The other is fitting in. But it seems like there's a difference. Help us out, Dr. Andre. What's the difference, and why do so many focus on the fitting in instead of the right fit?
Well, here's what we saw, and I want to start with fitting in because there are a lot of disenfranchised groups out there in the world today that have been asked to fit in their entire lives, to try to fit into their communities, into their towns, into their schools, into their workplaces. And I have a lot of empathy for that group of people. And there's a lot of great people doing work in diversity and equity, and inclusion to really help everybody not have to feel like they have to change who they are in order to be a part of a place, which I fundamentally believe in. When we talk about fitting in here, we're talking about a very narrowed piece of it, which is you're asked to fit in terms of the way that you like to do work, right? So you're actually changing your very natural ways of working, the way you like to collaborate, the way you like to solve problems, the way you like to join teams, get feedback, develop. And we do it to try to fit in, right? But here's the deal. Is when you're in that place of trying to absorb a different way of working that isn't your natural way, it's the equivalent of trying to spend every day writing with your non-dominant hand.
Oh.
If you've ever tried that, it's the hardest thing in the world, right? So in the book, we talk about this. And when you're writing with your non-dominant hand, a few things are always true. It's harder. It's lower quality. It's frustrating. It takes more effort. And you feel less competent. And when you're trying to fit into a company, when you're trying to work the way they work, show up in the way they show up, you're inherently putting yourself in a position where you're writing with your non-dominant hand. And you know what happens is that all your creative energy flows to trying to be good at the way of working as opposed to trying to be great at the thing that you are blessed and really brilliant at.
Oh, wow. This is certainly very enlightening for us this morning, Dr. Andre. Thank you again for joining us.
Of course.
Now, if I perceive, you talk about in this great book of yours some trends that have helped shape how talent and companies view the world. Do you want to share a few of these with us, please?
Yeah, I'd love to. So when you think about the trends that have led to a place where that staggering number we shared earlier, $7.9 trillion, is true, there's a few of them that kind of stand out for me. One is early in tech in the 1990s and sort of 2000s, there was this rise of a culture deck, right? It was really tech's way to say, we believe there's a better way to do work, right? We believe it can be less hierarchical, it can be faster, it can be more empowered. And so they started to create these culture decks that in their infancy were intending to teach people a better way of working. But those culture decks became marketing campaigns, right? If you look, like we said, you look at all the brands of all the big companies, they have these wonderful marketing campaigns around their companies, what it's like to work there, why you want to be there. They actually have turned their company into a product.
Wow.
And when you do that, you're inherently marketing on aspiration as opposed to reality. And so I think that's one trend that sort of has gotten us here. A second trend that's been really interesting is we've had a decade, over a decade of pure growth up until just recently, right? So we had this time in the world where relatively we were all growing and it was easy to put more resources, do more things, give more.
Wow.
And I think what happened there is we started to create this sort of sense of ability to just give people whatever they want or whatever they need, right? And so because of that growth, I think we just got too used to being able to just, hey, you want more money? Here's more money, a better title. Here's a better title. And we sort of lost our ability to focus on how do we get really good at the things that we do really well. I think the third thing that was really interesting to me was, and it comes from a book called Dedicated by Pete Davis, but it's this idea of everybody's infinitely browsing, right? So because we have all this access to social media, to TikTok, to Instagram, we actually have started to believe that the grass is greener because we see somebody who's out on social media, who looks like us, acts like us, has the same experiences that we do, and they seem to be in a better company. Now, we know that's not necessarily true. Everybody's Monday morning's hard, right? But we've gotten this place where because of this, we are not truly committed to anything. We've always got one foot on the outside. We've always got one eye on the horizon. We're always looking for the next possibility. Some of that's healthy, but I think it stops us from really being deeply committed to our companies and really staying in and finding a place that we could spend 20 years. Last but not least is just this, you know, this idea of purposeless perks, which kind of goes with the decade of growth. And It's that we started to sort of add all these perks into our companies that don't actually provide any productivity or value. And we did it because we wanted to entice people to come. And so I think in doing that, we sort of create an unrealistic possibility of what the world's going to look like. You know, work's not all ping pong tables and beautiful kitchens and wonderful offices. Like, we're actually there to get stuff done for the stakeholders that we serve. And I think sometimes we've gotten ourselves distracted from that.
You know, it's so interesting when you talk about spending years in an organization. I always like to talk about my late father, who 1929 graduated high school on a Friday night. He had no money for college. He went to work for Chase Manhattan Bank, now J.P. Yep. Morgan Chase. He worked hard. He was loyal. He was there 45 years. Now, me as a baby boomer, I went to Big Pharma expecting the same thing. I worked hard and was loyal, but you know, I was lucky to survive some downsizings, but was eventually downsized. But today, it seems nobody or rarely will someone go to an organization looking to spend 5 years even. It's, the whole workplace has really changed drastically.
Yeah, Greg, it has. But here's what's really interesting is I'm not giving up hope on the 20-year career.
Wow, that's great to know.
Yeah, because I just think fundamentally as human beings, you know this. Fundamentally as human beings, we are wired to be committed to each other. We are wired to belong. It's the way that we survived in the early years in groups and packs and being a part of communities. And part of what's happening is I think there's a lot of trends that have led us to the point where we're just in this kind of crisis of commitment. And the very thing that we know we need for our survival, for our health, for our well-being, which is connection, we're sort of giving up on in the service of ambition or something new. And there's this whole part of the book, and you'll love this, that we talk about this idea of, hey, there's two different sort of neurotransmitters in your brain that sort of impact your experience at work. One is dopamine. Dopamine is that, it's like pure excitement. It's the excitement of something new. It's the first date. It's the ability to look at this, go, oh my God, that looks really cool. And that's what sort of drives us towards a lot of new experiences. It's not that they're better. It's not that the company fits us better. It's not that it's more aligned to our ways of working. It's just exciting. And the other really interesting neurotransmitter is this idea of oxytocin. And oxytocin is what you get from sort of deep commitment. And if you think about the difference in oxytocin, it's more like a warm hug. And so often in our interviews with our interviewees, when you ask them, hey, looking back at your most right fit experience, are you sorry you left? And they're like, you know what? I don't know that I'm sorry because I've had a good career. But what they did say was this. They said that when I look back, I mistaken comfort for boredom. Because I didn't understand this idea that what I was feeling wasn't boredom, it was actually comfort. It's what comes from deep commitment. And so I wonder if a lot of the reasons that when we move these places that we love, these workplaces that we're a part of, that we're leaving them because we don't understand what commitment actually feels like, what comfort actually feels like, and we don't appreciate the benefit of that. When you have an established network, when you are a known quantity, when you understand and are riding with your dominant hand every day, you're purely practicing your craft. You're doing the thing that you're really good at. And so I want for talent to just look at this and say, hey, maybe the place you are is the place you're supposed to be. Because transitioning is hard. Meeting new people, building new networks, understanding new systems, trying to do new jobs. It's taxing. And the productivity loss we get in every single transition, it sets you back. And so you got to be really mindful of why you're moving.
Oh, well, great points, no doubt about it. Now, talking about right fit again, why and how is right fit reciprocal between the organization and the talent? Please.
Yeah, it's reciprocal in this way, right? So when you have right fit, here's what I would say is we had an interview. I'll talk through a story. We had an interviewee who talked about going to a company that had very well-established ways of working. They actually, during the interview process, would assess you on how you like to do work to make sure you were a match. And then when you got there, they had a school that taught you or reminded you every single year how the company worked. And at first, this is a creative. So at first, this creative is like, I'm never going to last here. It's too constraining. But what she found was this, and I found it super enlightening. She said, because I didn't have to worry about how to create the deck or the PowerPoint that I was going to put my idea onto, because it was a template. It was already done. I could just focus on the thing that I do really great in the world. And I could put all my energy towards that craft, because I didn't have to worry about all the other ways of coordinating work or figuring out how work gets done. And so because work was clear how it got done, I could do the work I'm supposed to do every single day. And so I think it's reciprocal in this way. If talent's writing with their right hand, they're more energized, they're more engaged, they're doing higher quality work, they're feeling less burnout, they keep passion in their role. And from a company standpoint, what you get in return of that, if you are clear about the way that you work and you're consistent in those work practices, you get more and more creative energy flowing into the company. And that will inherently provide you an easier path to growth, more value to your customers, and in the end, more value to your shareholders, including the employees themselves.
That is a win-win-win all the way around.
It sure now, is.
If I perceive correctly, because I'm not a psychologist nor real good with psychology, but it sounds like from the book, there's a few psychological barriers to finding and retaining right fit. Have I perceived correctly, Dr. Andre? And if so, help us out here, please.
Yeah, so there's a few of them. I'll talk about them from the standpoint of even the interview process. So one of the first psychological barriers we talked about, which is this idea that excitement can be to your detriment, wow, right? Because what you're seeking, I mean, think about how many first dates never turned into long-term relationships. Choosing your company, this is the thing, Greg, choosing your company is the most high stakes decision we will make. Did you know we'll spend about 13.5 years, total years, every day, every second, every moment of our adult lives at work? 13.5 years.
Oh my God.
And yet, the amount of information we have when we make those decisions, it's very little and it's very subjective. And so we actually take one of the biggest, most important decisions we'll make in our life, and we depend on a very inaccurate, often invalid source of information in terms of how well am I going to fit this place I'm getting ready to join. So one is just about that idea of watch out for excitement. It can sort of narrow your field of focus. The second one, which is really interesting, is confirmation bias, right? So confirmation bias comes in when you have all this wealth of information in front of you, this big circle of information about a company you're getting ready to join.
Sure.
And you're motivated to join it. We tend to only see information that's going to confirm that decision to join.
Oh.
That means that a lot of the information that would tell us otherwise, we're not paying attention to because we're motivated by making a certain decision. And in the interviews, I will tell you that almost every employee said, almost every talent said, when I look back at my wrong fit experience, I knew in the interview and I just didn't pay attention to it because I wanted the pay, I wanted the title, I wanted the excitement, I wanted something new. And then they got in the company and they realized they'd made a pretty big mistake.
I've heard the phrase very recently, echo chamber. It almost seems someone is in an echo chamber hearing what they want. Is that a good analogy, Dr. Andre?
I think that's a great analogy. And what I would say to talent that listens to this interview is they're going to ask the question of, what do I do? There's a few things you can do. I think first and foremost, you have to make sure that you're triangulating every single piece of information that you're using to make a decision to go to a new place or stay at the place you are. So if you hear it from one person, make sure you hear it from two. Make sure you hear it from three. Make sure it shows up on the employee reviews. Because here's the deal, Greg, is in another piece of research that you're going to love, MIT, one of my favorite pieces of research as of late, worked with Culture 500. And they basically found this, that there's zero correlation between the espoused values that a company stands up, they put in their press releases, they talk about on their websites, they use in their interviews, zero correlation between those espoused values, who we say we are, and the experience that employees are having every day at their job.
Oh, and so no.
The way that MIT measured these is they pulled the espoused values from all the communications, and they looked for how much those values showed up in the employee review sites from the employees, and zero correlation between the two. That means that there's a real mismatch between what companies are saying they are and what talent are sort of experiencing when they get there. And I don't just blame the company, right? Because part of this is, hey, talent, we got to be much smarter, much more discerning in the interview process to make sure we're asking questions allow us to really get at what is this company going to feel like to work at on a random Tuesday in October? Because that's what's going to matter to your happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. Believe it or not, we've only got about 5 minutes, Dr. Under. Time's going way too fast, but I've got a couple of important questions before we ask, naturally, where can our loyal listeners get this great book of yours?
You got
it. You talk about a lived value ladder.
I do.
Share a little bit about this ladder, please.
Yeah, I will. So in the book, there's excursions to really help talent know themselves and how they work before they go to get a job. One of the things that, again, the interviewer said is, hey, if I could go back and do it again, I would have done a lot more deep reflection before I ever looked for a new job. I would have found out what I valued, what kind of life I want to have, what I'm solving for right now, who I want to work for, what my career is about. And so in the book, there's 7 or 8 excursions that help you do that deep reflection in a very structured manner. One of them is the values ladder. And the values ladder is actually helping you to discern not what values I want to tell people I have, because we all want to be innovative and entrepreneurial and all these things. It actually asks the question of values come to life in the big decisions you make. So I'll give you an example. Like, I want to believe that I'm one of those people that's an entrepreneur, risk taker, innovator. Sure. And maybe in some ways I am, but in the big decisions, Greg, I am all about financial security. I'm about stability. I'm about making sure that my family is safe. And it's interesting, right? Because I grew up in an environment that wasn't all that safe, didn't have a lot of financial security. And so in that, I think my values and decision-making are very different than the ones that I like to share when people ask me. And we got to be honest about those because those matter. And so, you know, it's been a really good exercise even for me to do that ladder, to find out what do I really value in the big decisions and how do I share those as opposed to what I wish I was.
Oh, that is amazing. Certainly. Now, back when I was in big pharma, I worked quite a bit with strategic alliances.
Yeah.
And we used to say strategic alliance is very similar to a marriage.
Yeah.
I've never heard someone say a career is like a marriage. Share with us, Dr. Andre, is this something that you might believe, that career is like a marriage? And if so, how, please?
I think, you know, I do believe it's like a marriage in the sense that it's built to be a long-term commitment. And long-term commitments, they take work. They take work in the front end of making sure that we're compatible, making sure that the two of us spending time together is going to be a net positive experience. And that's the place where the book is focused. Commitment's also about understanding that we both change over time. And that just because you fit right now doesn't mean you're going to fit in the future. And so you need to constantly sort of look at that and make sure that you're renewing that commitment, recommitting every day to the company, just like you would a marriage. And last but not least, I'd say this, is just that in the end, you know, commitment is a net positive for both parties when it goes well, right? You look at the most lasting, wonderful marriages in the world, those two individuals reach the heights they reach because of each other. And so I think that if we can sort of see ourselves entering into a deep relationship, it helps us sort of shift the way that we see both the company and the way that the company sees the talent.
Oh, that is so beautiful, because people tell me, I've never been blessed with partner or family, but when you're in a beautiful marriage, there is very little like it. And I've also heard people say, today more than ever, if you're in a beautiful relationship with your workplace, it's really very, very special. So I can see where they would really be very analogous. So thank you for those insights. No question.
You got it.
We've saved the most important question for last, Dr. Andre. From where can people buy this great book, Wrong Fit, Right Fit, Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever? How can they best follow you, please?
Well, the book is out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the big stores. It's on pre-sale now. It releases on September 12th. You can find me at www.wrongfitrightfit.com and reach out. There's a newsletter. There's a bunch of assets and articles and presentations there. If you want to share your story of Wrong Fit or Right Fit, email me. I'm still taking those stories and trying to continue to build out the content. So I just love the conversation and find that we all have a a real big role in helping work feel like less work, and I'm going to take a run at it to help us all.
Listeners, no excuse. We've had a great Franciscan with us today, Dr. Andre Martin. He could have held on to the good. Now, what did he do? He shared the good. Now it's your turn. This book, as he said, September the 12th, just a couple of days away, is going to be available. Please buy one for yourself. Buy one at least, if not more, for others. Share the good. Maybe you have a relative, a friend who's in the workplace, somebody, maybe yourself, a colleague, a boss. Share this great book, please, please, please. Because as we said at the beginning here, knowing how we work is more important than ever. And this book will give us a lot of insights into how we work and how the best way moving forward is as we end 2023 and into 2024 and beyond. Dr. Andre Martin, thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us today. We've been enlightened, yes, much more. We've been inspired. You've given us hope for the relationship with work, and that's really important for the listeners and me. Continued joy, satisfaction, fulfillment, all this great work you're doing in Portland and literally around the world.
You got it, Greg. It was certainly a pleasure. Thanks for spending my Saturday morning with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Dr. Andre does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.